with a hidden shoulder fake to the rack. Oh, my goodness. Wayne,
Taps up a three.
Bam! Jimmy Butler, big time onion.
Side jumper off the mark.
Oh, back of right hand. Felicia right in the mug of Miles Plumlee.
Throw it.
Oh, my
down,
gosh.
Big man. Throw it down.
On the new home of the Chicago Bulls, this is Chicago Bulls Live. And now, here's Steve Cashel.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890, our look inside the world of Chicago Bulls basketball and beyond. I'm Steve Cashel. Let's go beyond as we bring in Larry Stewart, General Manager of Basketball Operations for the Bulls Sox Youth Academy, now in its 15th year of operation. And Larry, thanks for joining us here in Chicago Bulls Live. You guys have had thousands of kids every year come through these doors here at the Lyle facility and your satellite facilities. It is tremendous to see. Can you start off with one of those great success stories that you've seen? Because I know you've had a lot of them, but something jump out at you at all?
It does. And thanks again, Steve, for having me. Ironically, I thought about this just the other day. We have a young man who trained here at the academy and started out as a seventh grader, sixth or seventh grader, and worked with me pretty much up until he went to college. And his name is Jordan Ash. He played at St. Joseph's High School over in Westchester for the legendary Gene Pingitore. And then he went on to obtain a scholarship at Northwestern. So the ironic part about this is that now they are probably going to make the tournament this year. And so in my dialogue and texting and calling with Jordan, you know, he's going to be a part of history. And not to say this because I've been a part of his life, but I've seen his progression. And I'm just happy that he is in a situation now that he can take part in something special as being one of the first teams to make the basketball tournament, the NCAA tournament for Northwestern. But I saw that young man put in a lot of hard work, you know, three times a week with me, and now he's going to reap the benefits of his labor.
That's great. Just one example of what you guys are doing for the youth here in the Chicago area. Again, visiting with Larry Stewart from Bulls Sox Youth Academy. So, Larry, take us through what's coming up for the boys and girls of our area, because you guys provide such a great opportunity. So what's on tap here in February?
Well, in February, Steve, President's Day is one of the next days that's going to be off for kids in our area, and we're going to have a camp on that Monday, the 20th. The date, again, you know, is pretty self-explanatory. It's President's Day, so we can get kids from all over the place. I want kids coming from Chicago, Northwest Indiana, locally. They'll come in, and we'll get them in for about 3 hours, and they'll play basketball. Ages 5 to 14, we split them up accordingly, and boys and girls also can come, and we'll make sure that they have a great time during the camp that we're going to have here.
Fantastic. Let's move in, if we can, then, to All Sports Day. You've got the President's Day camp, as we just talked about, and clinics galore.
Oh, yeah, and the all-day sports camp, it takes place the following month. So, you know, I just want to make sure I get that on the radar because I want people to start signing up for it. It's going to take place out here on a Friday, the 3rd of March. And it's really a new concept because we're going to do basketball for 2 hours. We'll do baseball for 2 hours, and then we'll do extra gaming for 2 hours. We have a unique area upstairs where we do a lot of extra gaming, so a lot of games, but they have to be used by using physical. You have to be exercising by doing it, and so it's really cool. So you have 6 hours to be here at the academy from 9 to 4 as ages 5 to 14, boys and girls.
That's a great way because sometimes the parents go to work, but your kids have the day off. Bring them here to the Bulls Sox Youth Academy in Lyle for a fun-filled day of baseball, basketball, extra gaming activities, and always surprises along the way. And let's talk what's next because I know you guys have a full schedule.
We do. We have a ball handling camp that takes place next month as well. And, again, boys and girls. And we break it up a little bit differently because we have a rookie group that goes on Mondays. And they go from 8 to 10 as far as the age groups go. And then we also run a second group on Wednesdays, and they'll go from 11 to 14 years of age. And, again, the goal is to get them in. It's strictly ball handling, making sure that they're reinforcing the nuances of the game. And, you know, if you look at players that can handle a basketball, and not to say that a guy like Rajon Rondo is not a guy that can shoot, but he's not known for it, but he handles the ball well. So it just goes to show you that ball handling can take you very far if you're serious about it and you really work at it.
Absolutely. Again, our guest, Larry Stewart, General Manager of Basketball Operations for the Bull Sox Youth Academy. I'm Steve Cashel. This is Chicago Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890. And if we can, Larry, let's talk a little bit about the tournaments and the leagues coming here to the Academy.
The tournaments and leagues we run pretty much seasonally. And we have one coming up in March. And the reason I really want to get it out there about it this month is because, you know, once we have a full slate, I won't be able to take any more teams. But we want external teams to come in, play here on our beautiful courts. As you know, Steve, we look just like the United Center and the practice facility, the Advocate Center. So kids will be able to play on a hardwood floor that really replicates both of those places. But the most important information is that the tournament is four games. Is going to be on Saturday and Sunday, and we'll have the opportunity for them to come in and compete and play against teams from outside their area and see who's the best team. So it'll be fun, boys and girls, fourth through eighth grade, and we look forward to seeing a lot of teams come in so they can compete and have fun here on our floors.
And Larry, let's talk a little, if we can, about private lessons, because I know that's where the kids take the next step. Yes. And my boys have done it, and you guys do such an outstanding job because you have a great staff of teachers that allows for the great development.
Well, thanks, Steve. And because your boys have done it, you understand that we can work with kids on all levels. You know, it can be a kid that is 5-6 years of age and they're a beginner, and we work with kids that are 9, 10, 11 years old that are intermediate. Then we start working with kids that are 12, 13, like I mentioned about Jordan Nash, who's at Northwestern, who worked on an elite level. And so my instructors are appropriately placed where they can work with kids on all levels. Cal Cummings, who is one of my main instructors here, is a dynamic instructor who I trained and coached as a young boy. So I like to take credit for him and all the things that he does. But honestly, he went on and he worked at Illinois State under Tim Jankovic and, you know, really learned the nuances of the game, and he was able to bring that back here. And he's one of my main instructors here that provides private lessons. Daryl Thomas, who played under Gene Pingator's reign at St. Joseph's at a point, and then he moved on and played in Indiana under Bobby Knight, played professionally for about 13, 14 years. You know, he's just, his energy, his understanding of the game and just the things that he can do with a child is amazing. So, you know, he's the other guy that's here full-time on staff. I added a gentleman, his name is Gene Cross, and Gene has coached at UIC. He coached at DePaul. He's been at Virginia. He's been at Notre Dame. He was a head coach at University of Toledo. He also coached in the developmental league on the professional level. And now he's here in Chicago. And so I've been able to have him come in, and he's doing some work with us. And then lastly, myself. I do elite instructing. And so the four of us, along with some of the other people we have, I feel can really provide any child who wants to be taught and wants to learn a game of basketball the right way the tools to really move forward.
That's outstanding. Again, this is Chicago Bulls Live. Our guest, Larry Stewart, General Manager of Basketball Operations for the Bulls Sox Youth Academy. We're here at the Lyle facility. And, Larry, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about the Junior NBA. For yes. People who don't know what the Junior NBA, I guess it's been around a while, but fill us in.
Yeah, the Junior NBA is a great initiative, first of all. And the purpose of it is to really export basketball and make sure that people that are teaching are teaching it the right way. And so what the Junior NBA is doing is they're sending out kits and information to coaches, volunteer coaches, on how to coach basketball to make sure kids truly love the game in their first wave of being coached. And I think that's the most important thing is, you know, the initial time that a kid may be with a volunteer or whoever it may be, it's important that you capture them early. So within that, because of what we do and how long we've done it, we're directly connected to the NBA and the Junior NBA. And so our goal is to make sure that however we can assist to help people that are doing it, we assist them. But then most importantly, making sure that we reinforce what we export here at the Academy. So I'm very excited about it. You know, again, it's something that has been in existence, but Adam Silver has really, really put the initiative out on all NBA teams to do as much as they can to not only see as many kids as they can, but to also make sure the game is being exported the right way.
Fantastic. And finally, Larry, tell our listeners there how people can get in touch with you guys and the best way to kind of look over all the programs and things you offer.
The best way to get in contact with us is to go to our website. It's www.bullsoxacademy.com, or you can give us a phone call at 630-PLAYBALL, PLAYBALL, and ask any questions or, you know, get anything that you may want in regard to not just basketball, but baseball, fast pitch softball, and just being able to really understand how much opportunity they are for your children here through what we provide.
Wonderful stuff. Appreciate it, Larry.
Thanks a lot, Steve. See you next month.
Larry Stewart, General Manager of Basketball Operations for the Bull Sox Youth Academy. Again, the website, bullsoxacademy.com. Back with more of Chicago Bulls Live after this on WLS AM 890.
This is the new home of Chicago Bulls basketball. Hear every Chicago Bulls game here. WLS AM 890. Now back to the Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live. Our next guest is Jamal Crawford, who came into the league with the Chicago Bulls, now a longtime member of the L.A. Clippers. Here's more with Chuck Swirsky.
So, Jamal, the Sonics have no longer been in Seattle for, what, 7, 8 years or so. Do you ever catch yourself when you're reading the morning newspaper or going online looking at the standings, especially in your division, and saying, wait a minute, where's Seattle?
All the time. It's unbelievable to know that, you know, our fans are so wonderful up there. If you look at the Seahawks, you look at the Mariners, you look at the Sounders, and let's not have a team. You know, and Vancouver had a great team as well that turned to the Memphis Grizzlies, and obviously Seattle turned to the OKC Thunder. But, you know, growing up, seeing that, seeing Gary Payton and Sean Kemp and Detlef Schrempf and all those guys, you know, it kind of helped make my dreams a reality. So, you know, for me, I just wish a team was there, and I have no doubt that one day a team will get back there.
All right, let's talk about that for a moment. Growing up in Seattle, as I did, and we have a lot in common with Seattle and University of Michigan and then, of course, in the NBA. But as a Sonic fan, who are some of the players that you kind of idolized or followed?
Oh, Gary Payton, definitely. Sean Kemp, Detlef Schrempf. I remember Rashard Lewis. I liked him a lot just from the standpoint that he was really young, making that kind of leap. You know, and I only went to college for a year, so I was a young guy making that leap. So we struck up a friendship. Obviously, over the years, even when I was in the NBA, Ray Allen was really good for the team. Brett Barry. You know, so many guys. And going back even further than that, you get the Lenny Wilkins, the downtown Freddie Browns, the Jack Sickness, guys like that. You know, I've always been a Sonics fan. Growing up in Seattle, I try to support all the sports. But the Sonics especially, you know, since me playing basketball, you know, I was attracted to those guys and the things they were doing. I remember Dana Barrows. I remember I was at the game one night when Dale Ellis hit 9 3-pointers. So, yeah, a lot of good memories.
All right, do you remember your first game as a fan? I presume it was in Seattle, but do you remember the first time you walked into an NBA arena and saw NBA players?
Yes, I do remember. It was in Seattle, obviously, and I think one of those first games was Dale Ellis. He had made, I think, 8 or 9 3-pointers, I remember, because he came back out on the court and did an interview. You know, and he had ice on his knees at the time afterwards. I'm like, oh, that, you know, that must be cold. He's freezing right now. But I just remember, you know, the guy having ice on, he's doing an interview in front of the whole crowd after the game. He hit 9 3-pointers that night, so it was a special night.
You know, Jamal, you're so good with the fans, and, you know, you reach out to as many as you possibly can. And I am wondering, as a kid growing up in Seattle, were you the type of kid that went for autographs, looked for them, or tried to seek them out, or did you kind of stay away from afar and just, you know, marvel at their talents?
No, I tried to get as many autographs as possible. I really did, and it's weird. Even from Seattle and L.A. when I was living out here, as a kid as well, I remember sneaking in the games and seeing all the guys. And I remember guys that were really, really nice, and I remember guys who weren't so nice. And those memories stuck with me forever. So when I was a kid, I said, if I'm ever in that position, I'm going to be as nice as possible to every single person, you know, and especially kids, because I remember being that kid. I remember, you know, having those dreams, and those moments last a lifetime.
Well, you talked about the passion for the city. And before we talk about the years you spent here in Chicago, just a couple of side notes, folks. It's an honor in Seattle to raise the 12th flag. As you know, the Seattle Seahawks have an incredible fan base. With the stadium they play in, the noise factor is crazy. And early in the season, the Seahawks extended an invitation to Jamal Crawford, one of Seattle's very own, to raise that flag. What was that experience like?
It was incredible. It really was. I watched a few of them, you know, online just to see the reaction and how they set it up and everything, and to actually get that invite. You know, one of my close friends was like, Jamal, you need to do this. You've been saying it for at least 3 or 4 years. And then they finally reached out and really wanted me to do it, and I was beyond honored to be up there in front of 70,000 people, getting them riled up, getting them fired up. It's incredible. It's hard to even describe, you know, and to know that, you know, that's one of the top things you could do in Seattle, you know, personally, is to help raise that flag. And you're representing your community, you're representing the fans there, and representing everything that's good about Seattle, you know, and I was just really, really honored to be up there.
Well, you know what, Jamal, wherever you stopped, and when I talk to media people, they always say great things about you, which is a tremendous legacy. You've been in the league a long, long time. You still have a lot of tread left on the tires. And so let's talk about your stay here in Chicago. You're traded on draft night from Cleveland to the Bulls for Chris Mim, and you arrive in Chicago. Give me an idea who Jamal Crawford was at that point in your life when you arrived as a rookie.
I was someone who was just trying to really, you know, establish myself. Like, this was a lifelong dream. You know, you've been dreaming about this ever since you were a kid, like we just talked about, and even younger than that. Ever since I've picked up a basketball and played on a team, you've always wanted to play in the NBA. So to get that opportunity on a team I watched probably more than any team, even though I'm from Seattle, the Bulls are my favorite team growing up, just off Michael Jordan alone, is my favorite player ever. You know, so it's like, oh my gosh, you know, the history, you know, the John Paxtons and the B.J. Armstrongs and the Bill Weddingtons and Luke Longleys and Tony Kukoc and Scottie Pippen and all these guys just from being such a Jordan fan and a Bulls fan. You know, so now you see all these guys and you walk into the same locker rooms they walk through and talking to Jerry Krauses and meeting Jerry Reinsdorf and guys like that. And those were, I knew the history, like, inside and out. You know, so to be able to go there was such a dream. Like, that was my favorite team growing up, and have the opportunity to play there. You know, I remember the draft process. I went to, like, 5 or 6 teams to either talk to or work out for, and I was there for 3 days, and it just felt like home even then. The day I got drafted, I actually have pictures of it. At the draft, I had on my Bulls workout gear all day, like, everything. And I had no idea they were going to take me. I knew it was a chance, but it was just like, you know, it just felt right. So to go there, I felt like each year got better and better, and I was able to kind of grow from a boy to a man there. You know, I really had some things to learn about the pro game and being a professional, and I kind of took those lumps early on. And that was my first year, but by the time I left, I felt like I was really entering manhood, and I learned so much in my 4 years there.
Yeah, I'm going to digress for a moment. I want to get back to your rookie year, but you mentioned the history of the Bulls, and certainly you just, you know, were amazing describing some of the players that have been here and that have passed through, along with, our course, the chairman, Jerry Reinsdorf. One thing you are, and I want to explain this to our listeners, a lot of players don't know who they're playing the next game. They're just focused on one game. They have no idea what the schedule is in front of them. They have no idea of the history of the sport. Jamal Crawford gets it. Jamal, where did you develop the passion for the history of the NBA? Because I remember watching you on national TV. You recited, without any stoppage and hesitancy, every coach you played for in the NBA. And it was amazing. I mean, it was just boom, 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 boom. But also, you know the league. And I'm wondering, that just doesn't happen to every player. Where did that start? Where did that DNA come from?
Well, I've just always been fascinated. You know, I've loved basketball before I loved anything else ever in my life. You know, it's me and my basketball. And I used to collect cards. You know, I used to always collect trading cards. And I would read the front, the back, and where guys went to school, what number they wore. I just knew so much about the game and the history of the game. I always respected the people that had come before me. You know, and even when I wasn't in the position to be in the NBA, I just respected the people who played basketball before me. You know, so I've pretty much known just about every single person, you know, that has come through the NBA. You know, I've either watched film or looked them up, or I've just always been, you know, someone who was so intrigued by that. And I've always paid homage to the guys who've come before me, you know, and just, it's just been an unbelievable experience to be able to be that involved and that in love with something for so long. And I love it to this day, even more than I did before when I was a kid. So, yeah, the history part of it's always been there, and I've just always really, really been in tune and paid attention to that.
So on back-to-backs, let's say the Clippers are playing and you're leaving from Los Angeles, or you're on a road trip and you're getting on your charter flight right after a game, and the media relations people are passing out out-of-town box scores. Do you take them and read them on the plane?
Oh, for sure. If I don't already have all the stats from after the game, getting on the phone, getting on my iPad, things of that nature, because I'm such a fan of the game, I'm always watching. I'm always looking to see what's going on. I'm always watching other teams. There's probably not a player you couldn't ask me about, and I couldn't tell you about his game. You know, random, you could ask about anybody, not just the superstars, but just about everybody, because I'm always watching, you know, what's going around the league and what's going on and just in the basketball world. So, yeah, those stat sheets, I've usually beat them before they actually reach me on the plane.
Time for a short break here on Chicago Bulls Live. When we return, part two of Chuck's interview with Jamal Crawford. Stay with us on WLSAM 890.
To make your drive home a little easier, Steve Dahl is here. 2 till 6 every weekday afternoon on WLS AM 890. Now back to Chicago Bulls Live.
Welcome back to Chicago Bulls Live. And now part two of Chuck Swirsky's interview with former Bull Jamal Crawford.
Who came to you and said, Jamal, you know what? I want to start using you off the bench. I think we can use you. And then you flourished. Was that a tough conversation to have with a coach, or did you embrace it?
I really embraced it. And just to go back a little bit, my game had to change a couple of different times because I came into the league, like I said, I came in as a point guard. But then by the end of my Chicago tenure, they're like, you know what, you could score really well for us. We're going to kind of bring Kirk Heinrich along as the point guard and Jason Williams, when he was there before. So we're going to move you off the ball. So that was a transformation of going from point guard to two guard, basically my last year in Chicago. And then to the bench, I got tired, Chuck, of being known as a really good player on bad teams, you know. So I got to, once you get in the league for a while, it doesn't matter if it's situational or different things, you have to look in the mirror, you know. And so I was like, you know what, I'm going on my 9th, 10th year. I've never been in the playoffs. I've averaged a lot of points over the years. I don't care. I'll go to a bench role if that's what it takes on a good team as well to give myself the best chance to get to the playoffs and beyond. So I got traded to the Atlanta Hawks, and I talked to the GM at the time, as Rick's son, and he lives in Seattle, so he came over to my house and he's like, you know what, you may not start, you may come off the bench. And you got to remember, I've never come off the bench before in my life consistently like that. So I'm like, you know what, I'm fine with that. Like, I'm secure enough of myself, and I really just want to win. So if I have to take a step back and not start the game for us to have a better chance to win, I'm all for it. And I went to the Atlanta Hawks, and they had Joe Johnson, they had Mike Bibby, they had Marvin Williams, they had Josh Smith, they had Al Horford. So they had a group that had been together, starting together for a while, a couple of years now. So I said, no problem. You know, then I knew I was going to be a sixth man going into that year. So what I would do in the summer when I play, the first game, you know, I'm usually always on. But I said, you know what, I'll wait. I'll wait to the second game to get on, just so I can get used to coming off or not starting when the game starts and when we start playing. So from there, I talked to Mike Woodson when I got to Atlanta. And he's like, you know what? You're not going to start, but your role is going to be just as important. I need you to come off the bench and be that score, be that dynamic score. And fast forward, we won 53 games. I ended up being second lead scorer. I think I was like 18 that year, and I was sixth man of the year. And then from there, I was like, oh, I see the importance of it. You know, I see why Ginobili was so important with the Spurs, or why Jason Terry was so important with Dallas, or why James Harden was so important in OKC. You know, it doesn't lessen your role. It just strengthens your team. It gives you great balance. So from that, I was bought all the way in, and now my career has took on a different, you know, trajectory just by doing that.
What recommendation would you give a player in this league whose coach goes to you and says, listen, I know you've started, or I know you've done X, Y, and Z, but I need you to do A, B, and C?
Well, I would tell them that you have to truly commit and give yourself to the team. I think once you do that, that's when the egos check at the door. You know, it's all about the team and what's best for the team. I think for different guys, like you said, different situations arise. But I think, you know, if you have somebody who can average 20 points come off your bench, or you have somebody who can average, you know, 10, 12 rebounds come off your bench, or you have somebody who can, you know, get a couple blocks and a couple steals a game, or that energy, whatever it might be, and how your coach sees fit, I think you have to truly buy into that. If you commit to that and buy into that, your teammates will respect it. I think you'll feel even more rewarded because you had to step out your comfort zone of actually starting. You know, some guys can only play starting the game. I'm like, you know what? Any situation, I'll be able to come through because I pride myself on being a true professional, whether it's a starting, whether it's coming off the bench, whether it's playing point, whether it's playing shooting guard, whatever it might be, I feel like I can adapt to any situation. And that's part of being a professional, you know? And I think if you truly commit yourself and sell yourself out for the team, then it's an easy thing to do.
You know, Jamal, we often use the word chemistry in sports. Is chemistry, can it develop over time, or do you know right away this team has it or they don't?
Well, I think it's a combination of both. I really do. When I first got to the Clippers, my first year, it was like we all had been together for years. And, you know, we had a lot of new pieces that year. We had guys like Eric Bledsoe, myself, Matt Barnes, Lamar Odom, Rony Turioff. You know, that was just our second unit, and four of those five weren't there the previous year, you know, so half of our team overall were guys that weren't there the year before, but you could just feel it that we had such a chemistry and such a bond that was just unbelievable. But then you could be together with a group of guys for, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 years, and the chemistry's not there, it's kind of stale, and, you know, by that point, you guys both know each other, so it's not like the new kid in school anymore, that new freshness. So I think it goes both ways, but what I will say is chemistry is underrated. You know, if you look at the really good teams in the 80s and teams like the Spurs, they stay together for a long time, you know, and they have that chemistry. They play without thought. It's second nature. They know each other's going to be. They know how each other's personalities are. And I think that part especially goes into winning and building good habits. And I think when you have that chemistry, you know, the sky can be the limit for any team. I think you maximize that team's potential.
All right, Jamal, we're going to let you go. Just a few more questions. When you came to Chicago, again, as we mentioned, you're 19 years young. What did you do? I mean, did you find yourself just playing video games at your place? Did you just hibernate? Did you get out much? I mean, what was Chicago like when you were here coming into the league for your first few seasons?
Well, it was really cold, that was for sure. But I had a little experience before by going to Michigan, so I know it was pretty cold, but it was a great city. Like, I loved interacting with people. I love going downtown. I love going to Lake Michigan when it was in Lakeshore Drive, when it was warm, especially. I was there in the summer sometimes as well. And the spring is unbelievable. It's such a great town. I just loved it. I really did. I loved all the experiences. I never played video games. You know, I stopped playing video games when I was probably 14, 15. I think NBA Live 95 was my last video game I actually played. So,
really?
Yeah, it was just, yeah, it was more hibernating, going down to Dave and Buster's or ESPN Zone, all those different things. And just hanging out in the city. I really had a ball there, and I really still miss Chicago. I'm very fond of Chicago. And like I said, I grew from a boy to a man there, and every time I go back, it brings back a good feeling.
So, Jamal, here you are. You just signed a contract with the Clippers. And afterwards, I mean, you can go a lot of different directions. Maybe one day the Sonics will return to Seattle as an expansion ball club, and maybe you'll be in line to work in the front office, maybe coach, broadcast, whatever the case may be. But when your playing days are over, and I know you have a young family, do you want to stay in the game, and have you thought about post-playing career?
Oh, for sure. I definitely want to stay in the game. You know, I think whether it be broadcasting or front office, I think front office is terrific. Like I said, I watch so much basketball. I'll go to LA Fitness and not play that particular day and just watch the teams and how things are going. I'm just in love with it, and I think it'll be that way until I'm no longer here. So I'll definitely be around the game. You know, I think I have a lot of knowledge and a lot of experiences, some good, some bad, just to be able to give to younger players coming up. I've pretty much seen it all. You know, when you've been around the game this long, and you're still learning as well, which is really, really cool, you know, and really a neat thing about it. It's really nice, and I have no doubt about it, I'll be around the game. And I'll still be playing somewhere at a LA Fitness or Bally's near you once I'm 50, 55 years old.
Yeah. You know, Jamal, you've taken care of your body over the years. I mean, it looks like you're still a rookie when I see you play, and you still play with that enthusiasm. When a rookie enters the locker room, whether it's been the Clippers or other clubs you played for, what advice do you give a rookie coming into the NBA?
Well, on the court, to be the first one to gym, the last one to leave, be seen and not heard much. You don't want to come in an NBA locker room with a lot of veterans and be the loud guy there. Be very respectful. Be a sponge. Learn as much as you can. Take care of your body. You know, don't forget what got you here to the NBA, and always keep basketball as your number one focus. You know, as far as, you know, a lot of guys, and I don't knock them for it, they get into a lot of other things, you know, no matter what it might be, and that's a wonderful thing. as long as you always keep basketball first and know, you know, that you're in this position because of basketball. So I just give them advice, different things, how to be a professional, how to take care of their money, how to save. That's so important because the NBA career, I think the average career is 4 years. You know, you see so many guys come and go. How to be respectful of everybody, of every coach, of every veteran, of every player, because it's a totally new experience. And coming into it, we think it's just about what you do on the court, but there's so much more that goes into being a professional basketball player.
Yeah. You know, Jamal, one final question. When you look back at your career, and it's not over, and I know you have dreams and aspirations of hoisting the Larry O'Brien Trophy, but when you look back at your career and see what you've accomplished, we talked about the 50-point games. We've talked about the three-time winner of the Sixth Man Award. We're going to talk about one day in discussion for the Hall of Fame. I mean, what were your expectations when you joined the NBA, and have you exceeded them?
You know what? I honestly don't know if I had expectations. I'm not sure I could have dreamed this whole thing up. I wouldn't have known I would have played this long, you know, at this level for so long. I don't know. You know, I really don't know. And right now I'm still in the moment, but obviously I'm closer to the end than the beginning. So you start having thoughts and you start seeing all the great players of your era, whether it be Tim Duncan or Kobe or Kevin Garnett, these guys retiring. Paul Pierce saying he has one more year. That was like my era, my generation. So you know the end is closer than the beginning. And you just look back and like, wow, you know, to be able to look back and kind of leave your mark in a league with so many great players, the best players in the world, you know, you kind of look back and you can kind of smile a little bit like I left my mark.
That's Chuck Swirsky with former Bull and current Clippers player Jamal Crawford. When we return, we go one-on-one with Bulls head athletic trainer Jeff Tanaka. Stay with us on Bulls Live here on WLS AM 890.
Everything you need to start your week smarter and happier. Big John and Ray. Monday morning starting at 5 on WLS AM 890.
Welcome back, everyone, to Chicago Bulls Live. Our next guest is Jeff Tanaka. He's the Bulls athletic trainer. Here's more with Chuck Swirsky.
Jeff, you're from this area, and let's start with the Bay Area. Give me an idea and a scope about your, as you embrace this city in sports and how it became a large and vital part of your life.
Well, I grew up about 50 miles south of San Francisco in San Jose, and born and raised here. As I was growing up, you had the Oakland A's winning World Series, and then as I was a little bit older, 49ers and Bill Walsh came into prominence and kind of took the Bay Area by storm. And so it was a really good time to grow up as a sports fan in the Bay Area. The 49ers were good. Towards the late 80s, Giants, A's, Warriors were fun to watch with Run TMC. So it really became an integral part of the fabric of not just myself, but anyone that's a sports fan in this area. So it's got a really rich history, and that's something that's real special about this place.
So, Jeff, as all of us grow up in a certain area, you want to be the quarterback of the 49ers. You want to play point guard or center for the Warriors. You want to play center field for the Giants, so on and so forth. Were you an athlete? And if so, when did you kind of realize, you know what, my career can only take me so far, and I want to stay in sports, but I want to get into another area and stream of what sports is all about?
I guess you could say I was an athlete. I was not necessarily athletic. Played a lot of sports growing up, as most of us did, soccer, football, basketball, baseball. Made it as far as high school in a couple of sports, but knew I wasn't going to be going on to college or anything like that, but liked the environment. Had an interest and passion for medicine and sports medicine, and, you know, thought that might be a way to stay involved in the team type atmosphere, build relationships, which I've always, you know, put very high on my list of priorities. And it's been a nice way to dovetail both worlds together.
So you go from high school to college, and was this a major of yours, or did you say, I'm going to, you know, just kind of branch off and get involved while I'm still taking course studies?
I started out at Cal Poly San Luis Obispo as a physical education major, kind of looking into physical therapy and that realm of things. And as I was going through my coursework, one of my classes was an intro to athletic training. I was aware of athletic trainers growing up in the Bay Area and who the athletic trainers were with the various teams. And in undergrad, got some really good hands-on experience and really found that it was a an avenue that I thought I was proficient at. I was good, you know, pretty good at it, and thought it could maybe take me into a career.
All right. What was your first job as an athletic trainer?
Coming out of college, I was given the opportunity to do a summer training camp experience with the Raiders, who were still in Los Angeles at the time. That's how long ago that was. So I did a training camp with the Los Angeles Raiders, came back up to San Jose for grad school, and was my first year of grad school, splitting time between Santa Teresa High School and San Jose, and then also with the 49ers as a year-long intern.
And networking is so important. So how did you arrive in Chicago?
Through my time with the 49ers, one of my former head trainer, Lindsey McLean's former assistant, Fred Tedeschi, who I had worked for previously at Cal, was the athletic trainer for the Bulls for over 15 years. And they had an opening, and the opportunity came up, and the timing just was right for myself and with the 49ers, and looking at maybe having another opportunity. And that relationship really sealed the deal. Made my decision really easy to move halfway across the country and give Chicago a shot.
Absolutely. Well, this is going to be a two-part question. Number one, give some advice to young people who want to become an athletic trainer. And what is the definition of an athletic trainer in today's world, Jeff?
Well, I think this is pretty universal for any young person coming up and wanting to get into something professionally, whether it's business, science, sports, is you got to work. You got to be willing to pay the dues. You got to be willing to do things not for the money, but just for the opportunity and the hands-on experience. And as much as people can, I would encourage them, if they're interested in this field, whether it's volunteering for runs at Soldier Field or doing some things with, you know, community events, volunteer, roll up your sleeves, get your hands dirty, and get into it.
And define what an athletic trainer does. Like, give me an idea what you do day to day.
Yeah, it's funny because it's continually evolving. You know, way back in the day, it was taping ankles, helping with water and things like that. And that's what some people are kind of stuck in the mindset. But as science has advanced and medicine has advanced, I mean, we're handling everything from illnesses, you know, kind of triaging those things. We're kind of the first line of defense for the athletes, the coaches, and the staff, is all things medical care, whether it's pre-participation screening, and in our case, you know, a vast array of testing, pre-participation testing, athletic testing, just first of all to make sure that they're medically cleared to participate. And then also the club relies on our eyes and experience to do some assessments of incoming players, whether it's reviewing their medical histories, doing some movement assessments to see if they're at any higher risk for potential injuries, and try to give some information and feedback to the organization to give as much information as possible to make sound decisions. And then once the players are with us, we're with them every day, just monitoring their health, their well-being, mentally, physically, and building programs for them to intervene and make sure, you know, they have a good balance and they're moving right and dealing with the aches and pains that inevitably come along with playing 82 NBA games a year.
Great. Well, my final question, this is totally unrelated to the job you do. It's about your sweaters, because you've become a cult hero and a figure on social media about sweaters. How did it start? How many sweaters do you own? And have you kept abreast of the following you have regarding the Tanaka sweater that you have come to know and grow and love over the years? Where did this phenomenon start?
I don't know where it started. We still have not figured out who is behind
who posts the pictures?
Who posts the photos. I just knew that a lot of the athletic trainers had in the past had worn coats and ties, and that really wasn't me. And I also wanted to be a little bit more functional. If a guy's injured, down on the floor, sweaty, I don't need to be in a sport coat and everything like that. I wanted to be a little bit more functional. So that's just why I was doing something a little bit more comfortable. I probably own about 20-some sweaters that I try to rotate. We have no idea. My wife and I just laugh. My first year as a head athletic trainer, we actually used that website to kind of track my
my rotation and help me make sure I wasn't doubling up too much. But it's all in good fun, and a lot of the folks around the office get a good kick out of it, and my friends and family from all over the country kind of get a good laugh out of it. But it's been good natured, so we just have some fun with it.
Absolutely. All right, just one more question. When's the last time you did wear a suit?
It was my cousin's wedding last summer. There's few and far between.
So you do own one?
I do own a couple.
Okay, yeah. Good. Yeah. Well, Jeff, on that note, thank you. Thanks for everything you do for all of us, myself included. When, you know, we're feeling under the weather, you're always available, always accessible. I know the Bulls are enriched by your presence with the organization. We thank you for your time, and go Bulls. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Chuck.
That'll do it for this edition of Chicago Bulls Live. Many thanks to the Chicago Bulls podcast, powered by Lexus and available on iTunes. Our executive producer of Chicago Bulls Live is Dave Zaslowski. I'm Steve Cashel for Chuck Swirsky. So long. Talk with you next week for another edition of Chicago Bulls Live here on WLSAM 890.
I have actually been on Balance of Nature for a year now. I have MS, and I recently had an MRI. This is the first year that I've had a stable MRI, so I'm thrilled. When I have an MRI with MS, usually there are glowing spots that come through, which is damage on the nerves in my brain and my spinal cord, and when they're glowing, it means they're active. And then my last MRI, they pulled it up, and I honestly couldn't believe that it was my MRI. There was nothing glowing, and in fact, the dark spots were